A is for Arrogance by Winterhill. Read by Kelly. A Skyfall fic, relationship, 00Q, rating teen. Gun, said Q. Gun, said Bond, laying it on the table. Q raised an eyebrow. No Komodo dragons this time, I see. The number of Komodo dragons in Estonia is being what it is. Quite, said Q. Radio? Radio, said Bond, producing it. Exploding pen, said Q. It exploded, said Bond, a little hit of smugness in his tone. I suppose that's its function, said Q, who followed the old Q's blueprints to make the pen. He'd seen 007 in medical after M's death, and felt a distinct need to do something to help. The pen had been a welcome distraction for Q, too, for the nagging feeling of failure that clung to him after Silva. How are you, Q? Asked Bond, as Q tucked the gun into its case. What are you fishing for? He said, giving his lovely gun a little pat. What are you fishing for? He said, giving his lovely gun a little pat. I'm glad you got my equipment back safely. I aim to please, said Bond. Is that what you were aiming for? Said Q a little absently. I was wondering when you missed that shot. It was deliberate, said Bond. I needed him to underestimate me. Right, said Q, snapping the case shut and slitting it home into its place in the armory. Because you're just that good. You have to be good to get a job here, said Bond, his voice like velvet over steel. But you don't have to be the best. You just have to believe that you're the best. Yes, said Q, and he was obscenely glad that Silva was dead, because Silva had bested Q so easily that it made shame crawl in his gut to even think about it. And you don't, said Bond. Not anymore. Yes, thank you, I think I'd save it for my next psych evaluation, said Q. Bond grabbed him. That was one of the biggest differences between them. Bond was breath close to your ear. He was a broad hand clasping your shoulder. He was punching and fucking and flesh and blood. Q was glass and screens and distance. He had made his work screens huge so no one could come and stand in his personal space, loom over his shoulder, get too near. Even here in the armory, he had a desk strategically placed between himself and whoever he was working with. Clearly, the hint to stay away hadn't worked with Bond, who grabbed him and dragged him closer. Do you think I don't know what it feels like? Asked Bond. I think you're hurting me, said Q, and Bond tightened his grip on Q's upper arm. Damn it, 007, let go! He did so, and Q stepped back. What do you want? Do you want me to weep all over you about my low self-esteem? Because I'm pretty fucking marvelous. You hesitated when I asked you to hack the security system today, said Bond bluntly. You've got doubts. I'm dealing with them, said Q. You want something, and I'm sure this isn't only to frustrate me. But it's so much fun, said Bond. I can help you if you do something for me. Bond, said Q, I've seen what happens to people when you help them. What is it? I want, said Bond, looking as though he'd been made to swallow something that he didn't like, to learn about computers. And you think I'm the one to teach you? Aren't you the best hacker in the world? The Western world, at least, said Q reflectively. The entire world, said Bond, and he was all steel. I nearly died today because I couldn't deal with that stupid computer. You don't have to deal with everything on your own, said Q. Neither do you, said Bond, folding his arms. Let's both try not to forget that. Bond was still living in a hotel, his room clean and white and immaculate. The whole place smelled rather unfortunately like carpet cleaner and lemon. Q sat at the table, laying out the contents of his briefcase on the polished wood. Bond swirled the liquid in his glass a little, poking at the custom-built motherboard that Q placed in front of him. This computer seems to have a dreadful accident, said Bond. No, said Q. You're putting it together. Ah, I don't like jigsaw puzzles, said Bond. Too bad, said Q. Why is there a fan? Bond picked up the fan, examining it. Because things might get hot, said Q, and that got him a look and a raised eyebrow on Bond's side of the table. Why do you want me to build this thing? Asked Bond. You said you wanted to know about computers, said Q. That means very little on its own. He poured himself some scotch from the bottle between them. I am going to make you brilliant. 10,000 hours, said Bond. What? That's how long it takes to become a master at anything. That says something very disturbing about your life, said Q, wondering how many people one could kill in 10,000 hours. Pay attention because I'm only going to explain this once. Bond paid attention, clipping parts together under Q's calm directions, not commenting as Q poured himself more and more of Bond's scotch. Bond didn't need to learn this. It was quite obvious that he was more interested in operating systems and how to break them, but Q wanted him to have a sense of intimacy with the machines. Perhaps Bond might bring more of them back if he'd touched their delicate insides. He broke the box down again when Bond excused himself to the loo, neatly laying it all back out in a line. All right, said Q, a little tipsy when Bond returned. Put it together again your own. He was surprised, and more than a little gratified, when Bond did. No, said Q. No? Q took the smartphone from Bond's rough hands. Gently, he said. You're not trying to stab it with your fingers. Think of it as being a lover. Some lovers like it rough, said Bond. Everyone likes to be handled gently sometimes, said Q, stroking the screen with 3 fingers to make his email launch. See? I can be nice, said Bond. I have yet to see it. You saw me in Harbin, said Bond. Oh, that was nice. I rather thought that was sex prior to ruining the ice festival. I didn't ruin it, said Bond. The explosion melted half of the ice sculptures, said Q. I like the ice festival and you ruined it. You don't fly, said Bond. Have you even been? I'm a very active user of the internet, said Q. I don't need to get wet and cold to like the ice festival. One day, said Bond, I'm going to take you so far out of your comfort zones that you cry. Still not seeing the nice in you, said Q. All right, try again. I don't recognize this OS, said Bond. And wasn't that lovely? He was using terms like OS. That's because I made it for you, said Q. It rewards you for doing the right thing with pictures of fast cars and expensive suits. Not beautiful women? If you're not careful, I'll program it with pictures of me. That would be an acceptable alternative, said Bond. Acceptable, said Q, huffing a little sigh. You disappoint me so much. Bond took the phone back, dragging 2 fingers gently across the touchscreen. Better, said Q as the tracking program bounced up. Look, your car is parked at the front of my house. Astounding, said Bond dryly, but he kept going, prodding at the first app that looked like it contained alcohol. Did you put a book of cocktails on here for me? Yes, said Q. That's not how you make a martini, said Bond, sweeping through the recipes. He looked up at Q. But I appreciate the effort. God fucking damn it! The agent's breath was labored, wheezing, and Q wondered if 008 had punctured a lung in the fall he'd just taken, or, worse, if the gunfire Q had heard had made contact. I've got you on screen, said Q, pulling up the security camera feed. Good lord, 008 looked rough. Do I need to order medical evacuation? No, I got this. Good, said Q, fingers flying over the keyboard as he ordered an evac. Shit, even though the picture was grainy, he could see that something was terribly wrong. Don't die on me. You'd miss me? Naturally, said Q, because he'd be furious if he'd lost any of his agents. The wheeze turned into a choking laugh. This is why you're my favorite, said 008. I'm everyone's favorite, said Q as 008 rounded the corner, raised his Walter and shot the Mark in the face. Q watched 008 collapse and, oh, he'd done much worse than puncture a lung. He'd been shot in the chest. 008, he said. No response. 008. Nothing. Bill, wake the fuck up! 008 stirred. Oh, hell, he said. There's a medical evac team on their way to you, said Q. Keep talking to me.
What do you want me to say?
Anything, thought Q. Just stay alive. Tell me that my tech is still functional. Another wheezing chuckle, almost a death rattle.
Am I allowed to lie?
Yes, said Q.
In that case, everything is shipshape, said 008.
You'll be the first 00 to bring me back everything, said Q. I should get you a gold star.
I'd like a gold star, said
008 reflectively, as on screen the evac team reached him.
I assume that these nice people in white coats are your doing.
Indeed, said Q. I'm going to go quiet so that you can give them your undivided attention.
He'll still be there.
Yes, Q promised. I'll still be there. And I thought I was special, said a voice from behind him. You are special, said Q, muting the microphone, listening to the commotion as the evac team stabilized Bill. No one else gets private computing lessons in their free time. Every Tuesday night, without fail, Bond showed up and swallowed the bitter pill of working with computers. They'd hacked into the CIA's terrorist database for their last lesson, balancing a laptop that James had built between them. James finally had a new flat, but they went to Q's. Q had vetoed the hotel after the third lesson, preferring his place. He knew where all the spare parts were on his own home. You care about us all, don't you? Asked James.
No, lied Q. Bad idea, said James. Caring will get you killed.
It never got you killed, said Q.
It should have, said James, and then he was gone.
Q didn't really do people, but he did go to check on 008 down in medical, drawing a chair up close to the man's side. Medical always made him think of the previous M and everyone keeping watch over Bond after she died. Q would always wonder how responsible he personally was for the previous M's death. There had been no bedside to sit by, then just a coffin. Nearly losing one of his agents brought back the sick feeling of failure that had dogged him after the funeral. Hi, he said, looking down at 008's bleary expression.
Hello, Q, said 008. I'm afraid I lost your gun somewhere in the evac.
I'll take it out of your hide, said Q gently. 008 laughed wearily. I think someone beat you to it, kid. Get some rest, said Q. We're going to get you to retirement and it's not going to be a euphemism. Your optimism is nauseating, said 008, but he closed his eyes obediently. Thank you. Anytime, said Q, waiting until 008's breathing evened out before he relaxed. He could have done more today. He could have locked down the building. He could have turned on the sprinklers, anything to distract the guy that had shot 008. It was the little things, the tiny things that he could control, that he should control. Someone coughed and pulled him out of his reverie. He looked up and saw 007 at the door, watching Q watch Bill sleep. It's not Tuesday, said Q. I wasn't aware that I'm only allowed to interact with you on Tuesdays, said Bond. Come on, I'm taking you out to dinner, so you need to be ready to be picked up at 7.
Really? Said Q.
Really, said Bond. Do wear something nice. Q had never tried Dom Pérignon before, and he didn't really see what all the fuss was about. He didn't particularly enjoy caviar either, but Bond seemed to, and Q ate some because he hadn't eaten anything for 16 hours, and consequently even the table napkins were starting to look tasty.
They think I'm your sugar daddy, said Bond conversationally. Q looked around, noting the knowing looks he was getting from the other tables.
Right. Aren't you? He asked, and Bond's leg brushed his own, deliberately.
I know how much you earn, said Bond. You don't need my money.
I spend it all on making toys for you, said Q, sliding his chin against Bond's.
Really, playing footsie?
That's not a proper complaint, said Bond lazily.
Are you trying to distract me from the fact that I screwed up today? Asked Q.
Don't be ridiculous, said Bond. You got the evac team there. He reached across the table and took Q's hand.
Stop that, said Q, pulling himself free from Bond's grip.
You frustrate me immensely, said Bond, with a smile that said he liked being frustrated.
Good, said Q. How are you coming along with your homework?
Appallingly, said Bond. What would you do if I kissed you?
You'll have to kiss me to find out, said Q.
He probably shouldn't have said that, but to his credit, when 007 kissed him at the end of the night, he kissed back just as hard, then patted him on the chest right above his heart.
I'll see you on Tuesday, he said, getting out of the car, and then turning on his heel and trotting into his building. This little spring in his step, nothing to do with James fucking Bond.
I have a present for you, said Q, when James got back from a clandestine trip to Indonesia, feeling the warmth of another close to his body as James approached his workstation from behind.
Good, said James, kissing Q's neck. I deserve a present.
Arrogant fuck, said Q, and James kissed him again, a little stolen touch that Q really didn't mind.
I made you a tablet.
It was a beautiful little thing. It would look like an iPad mini, but the things that Q's tablet could do were amazing.
More homework?
Gentle, said Q, handing him the sleek device. She doesn't respond well to rough treatment. He absolutely did not watch James's hands as he carries the little tablet, trailing his fingers across the screen. So he had been paying attention. How surprising.
Beautiful, said James on exhaled breath. He looked up at Q. Absolutely stunning.
That one time that Q got kidnapped, they didn't torture him. They only threatened him, probably because they didn't have him for long enough to get through the torture. Of course it was 007 who fetched him back. Eve told him later that Bond had practically demanded the case. He burst in, hailing fire and fury, then untying Q, giving him a quick once-over for damage as the medical team stormed the room. Q tried not to cling a little to Bond. It wouldn't do to be too obvious. James wanted to take him home, but medical wanted him to debrief and check for anything untoward, which Q protested but eventually had no choice in. And then he had to go and tell M that he hadn't sold out any secrets. And then he locked himself in the server room and sat quietly under the air conditioner, making sure that the Trojan he'd released into his kidnapper system was doing its work, propagating to the members of the cell, leaving a trail of breadcrumbs right up through the doors for 006 and 009 to follow. Q knew that on bad days he felt calmer nestled between the servers, on with all his gadgets away from people. James apparently liked to be with others. He broke in while Q was still curled around his laptop. He didn't say anything, just sat down beside Q and leaned. Q didn't fight it.
Delegate, said James.
No, said Q, trying to look through the screen. I'll finish this trace, then the others can use it as a model, and you can take me home. Surprisingly, James obeyed. Q supposed that he'd been shaken by the abduction attempt. There were certain people at work who were almost supposed to be taken, field agents, frontline workers. Q felt a twist of nerves in his stomach when he thought about being taken again. He was supposed to be safe, secretive, behind the lines.
Your first time? Asked James when Q checked that his car door was locked as they pulled up at a red light.
Yes, said Q, and James made a little noise that wasn't quite an angry huff, but wasn't a sigh either.
It wasn't a Tuesday, but James lounged around on Q's sofa as Q took a much-needed shower and put on his pajamas, and then joined James, watching over his shoulder as James played with the new biometrics that Q had installed on his phone. Delightful, James murmured, putting an arm around Q. Will it explode if anyone else tries to use it?
Only if they try to use weaponized functions, said Q, yawning.
Don't mind me, it's been a long day. James nodded. I know, he said. You'll make me an exploding phone, won't you?
You know, you have the skills to program it to explode whenever you want.
Q's eyelids were heavy, and he gave in to the temptation to rest against James's comforting warmth.
Must I do everything myself? Asked James, but his voice was light.
Go to bed. I don't want you dribbling on my jacket in your sleep.
I don't dribble, said Q indignantly.
You could always take the jacket off anyway.
Go to bed, said Bond. You get cranky when you're tired.
Q sighed and went to bed, not overly surprised when he woke in the night, rolling over from a nightmare, to see James Bond stretched out on the bed beside him like a sleeping lion.
Sentimental old fool, said Q, reaching out to brush his fingers down Bond's cheek.
Hey, I heard that, said James, turning his head to kiss Q's palm.
Come here.
Q shuffled across the bed.
Thank you, he said into James's shoulder.
Anytime, said James, and Q went back to sleep.
Of course, there were still times when Q didn't react right.
I think someone's trying to access our system, sir, said a junior agent.
Fuck, said Q eloquently. All right, I think of something to throw at them.
No, sir, said the agent, looking up at him from a workstation. I mean, they're trying. Your failsafes are stopping them at every turn.
And, of course, everyone in the agency was in the fucking room, because M had been doing his weekly tour of all the divisions, Moneypenny and Bond following in his wake. Q steepled his fingers.
Everything?
Everything, she said. And your tracker has pinpointed them.
Now.
Clever boy, said M, and Q shuddered involuntarily. James gently rested his hand on the small of Q's back.
Good man, he corrected.
Yes, said M, looking at Q's screens almost as if he understood them.
He is.
It was like a dance. They didn't fuck, but they circled one another. A present here, a touch there, a kiss whenever James thought they were alone. A tease every time Q was the little voice in Bond's ear, so much more intimate than with any of his other agents, and so much more intimate than Bond with his girls.
Everyone else found out about Bond's computing lessons on a hot day in July, when the outside temperature and the warmth of the computers meant that everyone was sweating, even M, who had loosened his tie a little in concession to the weather. Q could feel the sweat clinging to his back, and he wondered if it was his beastly hot in Russia.
Oh, probably not. He had the vague idea that Russia was always cold.
I'm trying to access their networks, said Q.
What's the problem? Asked Bond calmly, smoothly, like Q's computers gave up and stuttered in the heat all the time.
Overheating. AC has broken down. The crays are toast.
Ouch, said Bond. So you could go offline at any second.
That's about the size of it, said Q.
I'll do it, said Bond.
What do you need?
If we can get into the programming to the hydroelectric station, then we can shut down their power generation and deprive what whacking great laser of any electricity, said Q.
On it, said Bond. Genius.
M leaned in. Is Bond hacking?
Yes, said Q, an odd mix of arousal and pride heating up from the inside.
Who taught him how to do that?
I did, said Q as the screens momentarily darkened.
It would appear that an old dog can learn new tricks.
He was still nervous until Bond breathed, I'm in, and then proceeded to take out the entire power station. Then Q allowed himself to be a little smug. He was not only the best hacker in the world, he had trained James Bond, who only liked things he could hold in his hands, and other things that he could either fuck, shoot at, or both, to break into his system so silently he might as well be a ghost. Extraordinary, said M, as Bond broke down the complex computer systems. Absolutely extraordinary. The whole office was buzzing when Bond got back. Had people seen him go? Had they seen the hack? Had they known Q was training him? Q stood at his station, smugly alone, listening to it all. He knew the second that Bond was back in the building. Q went to M's office, standing outside under Eve's watchful eye, as his agent debriefed. You're hot for him, said Eve. Good thing he's hot for me, said Q sharply. She laughed. He's hot for anything that walks, she said. Not just that, said Q. He likes computers now. On cue, the door to M's office opened, and Bond walked out, jaunty as you fucking please. Q, he said delightedly, we've got the afternoon off. Tell me that there's champagne on ice at your place. There is, said Q. I'm sorry, Moneypenny, but I need this young man to come home with me right now, said Bond charmingly. We have some unfinished business. You're going to defile our quartermaster, said Eve, folding her arms. Don't look at me like I should be impressed. You should be, said Bond. He likes playing hard to get. Q managed to keep his hands off James until they got in the door of his flat, and then James threw him up against the wall and it was all over. Oh, fuck, said Q, as James crowded him, cupping his face in both hands. Precisely, said James, kissing him. Q gave in at that point, even though he knew it was a line. He was a strong man, but there was no point in fighting this. He let James shove him up against the wall and kiss him hard and deep, digging his fingertips into Q's hip while his other hand tucked at Q's hair. They fell into bed together, James fucking Q with long, deep strokes that matched the exhale of his breath into Q's ear. Gently, Q murmured, close to the edge. This is gentle, James said, nipping his earlobe. Q managed before James reached around and took his cock in hand, and that was it. He was gone. James followed, holding Q close to him as his breath slowed, kissing his neck, stroking down his sides like he was directing data on a touchscreen. James stayed the night. James stayed a disturbing number of nights after that one, except when he was working, in the course of which he somehow managed to take Q to a number of fancy parties and show him off like a trophy. Q would be disappointed, except that James fucked him like he meant it. And he really did seem to enjoy hacking, and there was always something to be said for a partner who shared your interests. Alright, so Q hated field work, even though he knew that it was James's primary interest in life. Too bad. He was allowed to be selfish, and it didn't matter anyway. M made him go out even when he didn't want to. Q flew into the Congo for an intensely horrible week, only mitigated by the frequent fucking and James flying home with him, tucking Q against his chest when the inevitable turbulence began. I have you, said James as Q's trade table shuddered. Very reassuring, murmured Q. I'll have you know I'm an expert skydiver, said James. Is there anything you can't do? Q snapped. I don't wash dishes, said James, and I'm told I'm a terrible house guest. I can imagine, said Q. You have a dreadful habit of bringing your work home with you. You don't mind? No, said Q, stroking James's arm. I suspect that we are very similar in some respects. James smiled. Very similar, I would wager. You would know, said Q, and James's smile was so delighted that it burned. So, how good are you? Asked the newest member of staff, wide-eyed at Q branch and everything that was in it. I'm the best, said Q. The best at what? She asked. The best at everything, he said. That's a little arrogant, don't you think? She asked, pushing her glasses up her nose. Q glanced at her. He knew who he was. He knew who loved him. He knew how fucking brilliant they could both be, together and apart. He smiled. Not if you know that it's true.
The end.